much, and many thanks to inviting me to address the social forum. I mean, the topic of our discussion this afternoon is overcoming the global challenges to recover better. And I think I don't need to repeat them. I mean, they've been eloquently set out by the two previous speakers. But as ever, you know, what we have to do as the international community is to try and balance the immediate needs, which I think now are increasingly making sure that vaccine rollout to all countries and all people within them is accelerated, versus the longer term needs, which not only have not gone away in the pandemic, but in many cases have been exacerbated. And if the pandemic has taught us anything, it is the magnitude of global shocks and just what that means. So whether that is another pandemic, consequences of climate change, food crises, the list sadly gets longer and longer. The other thing we know, as the previous speaker made clear, was this has been worse for the poorest people who are least able to respond, adapt, and build back better, and particularly for women and girls. So the very poorest in the world are getting something like about $4 per capita in social protection, compared to an average of $695 per capita in the rich countries. And that divide is likely to increase. So I've been asked specifically to talk about what official development assistance can do to help. I think it's axiomatic to say that demand for official development assistance is rising exponentially, and it is impossible for supply to keep up. Development cooperation providers, members of the Development Assistance Committee that I chair, are facing enormous challenges themselves in meeting these competing and increasing demands. And donors are under pressure as never before. Nevertheless, members of the Development Assistance Committee so far have paid for 84% of the financing that's been given to the ACT Accelerator Mechanism for COVID tests, treatments, and diagnostics. So my first question is, where is the rest of the rich world? There are just 30 members of the DAT. Others really need to step up with highly concessional finance to help out. The members of the Development Assistance Committee cannot do this on their own. The other thing is that we're facing is that as resources are understandably diverted towards meeting the immediate COVID crisis, that means that there is less money going elsewhere. So with these big challenges in mind, how can we step up our development cooperation? I'd like to focus on what I see as three opportunities for ODA action. The first is some good news. ODA actually has remained remarkably resilient for now and increased by about $10 billion last year. So an increase of about 3.5%. And that was at a time when all the other major flows of external income for developing countries, foreign direct investment, trade and remittances all declined, some of them very dramatically. So ODA has remained resilient, and it has a unique and catalytic role. And the thing about official development assistance, ODA, is that it goes where private finance doesn't. But when it's used most effectively, it can be catalytic in leveraging additional financing for developing countries and help to close the gap in financing requirement that we need to tackle the pandemic, but critically, the longer term sustainable development goals, which of course we are all signed up to. The second opportunity, I would say, is to build on what works best. The quantity of financing is one thing and something, to be honest, that we all tend to focus on, but it's also important to improve the quality of interventions. We need to learn lessons. We need to use the new evidence we have and do more of what's proving to be most effective for the most vulnerable people. So just by way of an example, The recent work of the COVID-19 Global Evaluation Network has shown that throughout 2020, so in the height of the pandemic, development cooperation actors were able to work rapidly, flexibly, creatively, and had a much higher risk appetite than normally to help a response in partner countries. What we need to do now is to use the lessons that were learned in real time to scale up these efforts and to apply the lessons across development cooperation more generally. And the third opportunity, I think, is to refocus our attention on people and particularly the most vulnerable. I mean, it is tragic to think that at least 100 million people in the world have been pushed back into poverty during the pandemic. I think the figure is probably much higher. And we know that, you know, we are going backwards rather than forwards on almost all the sustainable development goals for the first time in decades. Now, most developed countries are expecting to rebound from the crisis either this year or next. But we know that in the poorest countries, the small island developing states, the least developed countries, the estimates are that it's going to take 4 or 5 extra years to recover. I mean, that is not really a bounce back, is it? So what we need to do is to refocus this very precious ODA that we have on these most vulnerable people and to do everything we can to make it work as hard as possible. Let me conclude, though, by saying that ODA is only a very, very small part of the financing gap. I mean, we've heard about the debt relief. We've heard, you know, we know that the private sector is going to play a critical role. And as I've said, we need all countries who can afford it to contribute to the recovery for poor countries. We will never, as has been said, recover from this unless we all recover. And the stark reality is that ODA will be more and more and more in demand, and we need more countries to help contribute to it. Thank you.